The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. Connect with ultra-fast speeds and our best ever Wi-Fi all around your home.
Oh, lordy, lordy. Okay, the RTE Concert Orchestra, the winter sessions coming up this month include a John Lennon tribute for his 40th anniversary, hits from the musicals. Oh, we need all this. A Christmas special with an Irish flavour and a Viennese New Year's Day celebration with the ever-brilliant, world-renowned concert orchestra conductor and choir master, Mr. David Brophy. Welcome, Dave. It's nice to see you.
Hi, Ryan. How's it going?
Thanks for coming into us today. Are you working away in Studio One in the next little while, or what's the plan?
Not today. Studying today for rehearsals with the National Symphony Orchestra on Wednesday.
So. I see. How's the rehearsal going vis-a-vis COVID? Is it weird or just recalibration?
It's utterly bonkers.
Is it?
Like everything else that's going on in the world. Yeah. And so normally, like, there's things like we got to do. Obviously, the social distancing is a big issue because if you see an orchestra, normally they're all sitting on top of each other.
Yeah.
And you've got string players who are used to having two players for what we call a stand or a desk, you know. Now they've all got to sit up with their own music stand. So we've had things where the first violins are coming to the end of a page, and normally you'd have the inside player, which is the person sitting furthest away from the audience, turns the page while the outside player keeps playing.
Yeah.
So you don't get a big hole in the thing, you know.
Yeah.
Now we've had situations in rehearsal where everyone turns the page at the same time. There's a big schmozzle. Everyone cracks up laughing and there's no sound. So we have to go to the library and go to Mary Adams' library and say, Mary, will you photocopy this page? Because we can't do the page turn. So there's all that going on. Obviously, the wind and brass, they can't wear masks. With the strings wear masks because they can't play into their oboes and their brass instruments with masks on. So they're in kind of perspex cages.
Just like, you know, a movie. It's a science fiction movie.
It is. And the other thing is that, like, because everyone's so spread out now, people are miles away from each other, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, like, you might have players who are like 30 metres away. Like, sound travels at 343 metres per second. So if you're 30 metres away, it's a tenth of a second, which is not that much, you might think. But actually, when you're playing fast music, it's like a semi-quaver. So it actually is a huge thing, you know. And everything kind of, yeah, it's not easy. But to be frank, I should qualify all this. We feel so, like, seriously privileged to be able to play. Because I know musicians who have not performed or played at all since March. And we feel extremely lucky to be able to do live streaming.
We had the house band back on Friday night and the late, late. I'm a big fan of having live music on the show.
And
I hadn't seen them for ages. I forgot how much fun they were, what they brought to the program, the energy in the studio, just the musicianship of it all.
Yeah.
And like you with the orchestra, you know, everything taken for granted, music, instruments, talent, beauty.
Yeah.
You know, it's so nice to have, have the band. This is your band,
this is
back.
Back. And it's also the thing about, because when initially lockdown started, you know, we're all listening to music through our headphones and computers and online, everything, you know.
Yeah.
It's the notion of hearing music live in a room.
Yes.
The air around you is moving, vibrating to these amazing sounds with people who are holding violins and blowing into bits of tube and all that type of thing, making these amazing sounds, you know. And it's like, it's when it's taken away from you, is when you obviously you appreciate that bit more, you know.
And will the sessions we're talking about are to be download streamed, is that it?
So we've recorded over the past few weeks some sessions in the concert orchestra. We were in the RDS, and so we've got the John Lennon tribute on the 11th, and we've got the hits from the musical on the 18th. We've got the Christmas special on 25th on Christmas Day, and we've got the Viennese New Year's celebration on the 1st. And they're all streamed on rte.ie/culture at 7 p.m. on Friday evenings, which I'm sure you can get them after as well.
Yeah, of course. And then you can settle down to the late at 9:30. So that's great. You can go in, have the gig in your kitchen at 7 o'clock.
Wherever.
Put on your tie.
Yeah.
Make an event of it. No, seriously.
You don't have to. But
you just want to make it really relaxed.
Really relaxed.
A glass of something nice.
Yeah, a glass of something nice is good.
Treat yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Treat it like it's a night out, but it's a night in.
Yeah.
And this is the likes of, will we play a little Killian Donnelly?
Play the fantastic Killian Donnelly.
And Mairéann O'Mahony.
And Mairéann O'Mahony, yeah.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing you can expect to hear.
This is on the 18th, on the hits from the musicals.
Oh,
yeah.
Beautiful. That's a Friday night. Share each day with me each night, each morning.
I ask of you.
Yeah, Johnny Mathis. I'll trade you Andrew Lloyd Webber for Johnny Mathis. We're talking about mum. Dave was like, "What? Do you like that music?" I actually really like this, but it reminds me of my mother. It's mum music, you know. She had advertised the vinyl album of Andrew Lloyd Webber's greatest hits, Another Suitcase in Another Hall, you know, Evita, all that sort
of
thing.
Yeah, it was different in my house because my mother had. Was into Johnny Mathis. She had a Johnny Mathis Christmas LP that was taken on Christmas morning.
There's nothing wrong with that.
At 11. It was fantastic. It was gorgeous. That she did make things a bit more Christmassy than normal. You know, like, so that, anyway, was, that was
Killian Donnelly and Muireann O'Mahony there singing, and then All I Ask of You from Phantom of the Opera. And that's the kind of, that's lovely. I mean, you can't go wrong with a bit of that.
They're all the hits in the musicals. You're going to hear all them on the 18th.
We love that. Can I ask you how you are?
I mean, you're asking me this for a reason, Ryan. It's like word has spread.
The word has spread. It's like a children's book title. The conductor, the bike, and the Lewis track.
I fell off my bike. I'm such an idiot.
No.
It's. I feel like an idiot because I wasn't just by hit by a car or I did something stupid. I did do something stupid. I was a couple of weeks ago, last Wednesday fortnight, I was turning around. I cycle everywhere in Dublin. It's the only way to travel for me, and I have done for years. Mm. And I'm not a kind of COVID cycler, somebody who, when the things.
Yeah, you're not one of those.
And which, of course, it's great that those people are out cycling. And so I've been cycling for years. And then 2 weeks ago, I was just leaving rehearsal with the NSO in the National Concert Hall. And I was turning from Stephen's Green down Dawson Street. And it's a tricky junction because the Lewis tracks are coming up around up Dawson Street. And it had just been raining. And my front wheel decided to get very intimate with the Lewis track. And I got stuck in the Lewis track. And I went for a sevener.
And landed.
Well, I kind of landed because I just pulled away from a green light, so I wasn't going fast. If I was going faster, probably momentum would have taken me through the track, you know. But and I landed on my left scapula, but on the corner of the curb. So I caught the corner of the curb and I could hear the crack straight away. And so that wasn't good. So so I kind of need my left scapula. It's kind of important.
Conducting is enormously physical, right?
It is a physical thing, yeah. And so I do feel a bit like I'm flying on one wing at the moment.
Finding Nemo.
Yeah, and I actually was recording with the concert orchestra the week after, and I was talking to Joe Chibi, the general manager of the concert orchestra.
Yes,
and I said, Joe, I can do like a one hand. My right hand is completely fine. My left hand will be limited. And he said, yeah, let's do it. Let's go for it, you know. So it's been interesting.
Didn't Def Leppard have a one-arm drummer?
That's true.
So
come on. And actually, was it Def Leppard? Was he the guy who had two pedal bass drums as well? There was two pedals.
I don't know enough now. I was spoofing on the first bit, so I can't take it any further.
Maybe
than
I'm spoofing now. So, I come off the bike, and so it'll be a few more weeks before I'm fully back. But every day I get more movement, and I'm fine. Like, I'm grand.
Can I ask you something about your younger self that I found really intriguing? No, the reason I ask is because obviously I'm in toy mode and kids and Christmas, but also because I've really admired what you've done with the homeless choir and the carers choir. And there's a streak in you, David, that even though I don't know you particularly well, but anytime I meet you, I always like you, but which strikes me as being very kind, thoughtful and empathetic. And when I heard about maybe this, it kind of put a lot of things in context. You had a tough go of it in school as a boy. And could you tell me, it was an all boys school, right? Why was it so awful for you?
God.
We didn't expect this, but I
wasn't expecting this at all. Like,
go for it. Do you mind me asking?
Yeah, no problem. I was in an all boys school in, I grew up in Santry. Mm-hmm. And so I went to Our Lady Victories on Ballymun Road, and all boys school. I went to St. Aidan's in Whitehall, and I just assumed there was two people in the world. There were those who were bullied and those who bullied. That was it. You know, there was. I didn't get the impression there was people who just went through life who were just left alone, you know. So I kind of, it was rough in primary school, and I've got stupendous ears.
How rough was it?
And I was slagged off for horrendously on them, you know. And it was rough. I found it difficult.
Did you get beaten up?
Oh, God, a lot.
Why?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I presume I was different. And of course, the fact, like, I played piano and I sang in a choir, like I joined the Greenfield Singers when I was 11. I mean, you're definitely gay because you know, you played piano and you do classical music. And then also, I remember I got slagged off because my father gave me, this sounds terrible, but he gave me his sister's old, you know, the old music cases with the bar that goes over, like, they, you know, and you can just see in a particular context, you know. Mm. You know, I always think back to Woody, you know, Woody Allen films where they do flashbacks to him when he was a kid,
yeah.
And there's always shots of him and somebody takes his glasses off, puts them on the floor, and steps on his glasses. You know, well, I kind of felt a lot like that kind of when I was younger.
Was it relentless?
I felt it was relentless. Mm. It might not have been, you know, but I felt it was relentless. So I don't know. I mean, obviously that kind of shaped me, the type of person I was, and I probably became, like most teenagers, quite introverted, I'd say.
Did you talk to your folks, or were you embarrassed about it, or how did you?
No, I think my folks were very aware of it and very good about it, extremely good about it. Yeah. But I think there's only so much your folks can do.
Yeah, but you're
that,
a dad,
you know?
Now. I mean, and have dad, been yeah, for yeah. a number of years. But yeah, I just think when you're in the event of your child being in any way worried about the world, or
yeah.
whether it's you know, anxiety or if there's a bullying situation,
yeah.
there's a terrible degree of helplessness.
It's very difficult, you know, because you as a parent, you rely, because you're not in the school. If it's happening in school, you're not in the school. You don't know what's going on, you know. And for me, it was like I used to kind of wake in the morning and I know I'd say to my mother sometimes, I've got a sore tummy, and I really did not want to go to school.
Yeah.
And I kind of did, especially in primary school, not so much in secondary school, especially in primary school, I would have this feeling in my tummy in the morning, I'm going to go into this again, where I'm going to have another day of kind of relentless bullying and being picked on, you know. And but there's nothing you can do as a parent, there's very little you can do, and you do rely on the school. I know my folks went to the school and kind of said, like, you know, this is kind of not on, you know. But I had a guy when I was about 10, there was a guy in my, and he wasn't in my class, he was in the school though, who repeatedly threatened to hang me like not just 6 months, but for a couple of years. And of course, I was probably 9 or 10 at the time. I utterly believed it.
Of course you did.
And so you don't recover from that very easily, you know. And that doesn't leave you. You know, so when somebody says to you, you know, I'm going to hang you, and you're like 9 or 10. And
any idea of why you? I've asked you that before already.
I don't
this
know,
morning.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned your ears, which are pretty much the same Arwell gene pool as my own. You know, but also you have to survive that then. You don't want to be a burden on your folks and your family, and yeah, you don't want to be seen again. So you become the introvert like you describe it. How did it stop, or how did
when I was in secondary school, and it comes to that time after the, well, for me was the intercert, and you kind of say, what are you going to do with your life, and you know, what's your career you're going to do? I was adamant I wasn't going to college, because I saw the college of being like more like school, you know. And then I eventually did go to the College of Music, and when I left school, like, I would say my life began. I was going, oh, this is the world where you can go and be in a classroom with other people, yeah. and then not get slagged all day long.
And females.
So that was the first time.
As well.
And females, yeah. I'm a great believer in co-ed, you know.
Yeah.
I think, you know, because I had no sisters.
Yeah.
So if you spend every day with boys all the time, you've no sisters, you're in a bit of a difficult situation, yeah. when you get to 17 or 18, you know. Mm. So I went to college, and then my life began. I was kind of going, okay, this is great. I actually don't spend the rest of my life getting slagged off, and I don't spend the rest of my life
amazing.
Getting bullied or
amazing.
Abused.
I think that, and thank you for talking to us about that, because I think it's really interesting that, you know, it to me it informs why you have such a kind streak in you.
Well, when, I don't know.
And,
I mean,
the way you deal with people is really...
I would say it's complex, and I'd say probably only the past few years that I've kind of, I'd be kind of willing to admit that kind of bullying and what I put up with in school probably shapes a little bit of who the person I am nowadays.
Yeah.
You know, and probably for many years through my 20s and probably all my 30s, I wouldn't have even referred to it, you know. But maybe I think just for some reason the past few years, I think I've kind of, even for myself, said, actually, this was a thing that happened to you, Dave, when you were younger, and actually is part of your life.
Yeah.
And it's really kind of shaped the person I am now, for good or bad. It has had
well
an
for
impact
good
on me,
I
know,
think
and it doesn't well not all the time, you know, but like everyone has their good and bad
that's
points
true.
You know, but I think it's only in the past number of years where I kind of felt, you know, okay, this is a real thing that happened to you, and it never goes away. I certainly remember, you know, I will never forget all the occasions when one of the kids said to me, I'm going to hang you. And to leave and to come home and to, you know, as all kids, everyone lives with their own thoughts and lives in their own heads. and you come home, and I said to my folks, but you know, it doesn't leave you, and your folks my folks were fantastic and they reassured you all the time, but then you meet the same person a few weeks later and do the same thing, and they know they're having an impact on you because they know that you're vulnerable in some way, and that's what it's about, you know. But when you utterly believe it, and I did many days and I was terrified.
I think for people listening this morning,
Ryan, is that this is going on today.
That's
probably what you were going to say.
No, go on.
This is going on today. I mean, I saw something, I saw something on RTE over a year ago, and there was a teenager. She must have been about 15 or 16. I don't know even what the program was. And I think she was living in Finglas or something. And she was saying she was scared to go on the bus after 6 o'clock in the evening, you know, because she's going to get bullied. And this type of thing goes on today. And we, you know, we just.
It's a scourge. And it happens to adults in workplaces.
It happens to adults all the time.
But worse, again, to children. Yeah. And that's why you talking about it today helps matters, because people will say to their children, look, you know, it's tough. You can still turn out to be a good person.
Yeah, well, probably in a weird way, like as a conductor, you kind of have to. When I'm in front of an orchestra of like 50, 60, 70 players, you kind of have to sometimes hold firm against lots of different opinions coming at you and things that way people play, you know. So I think maybe a little bit of resolve that I managed to gain in my childhood and teenage years possibly has helped me in my life.
Did David ever confront or meet his bullies in later years?
No, although it has really. I've thought about that a lot.
Have you really?
Have I? If I'd met that person, I don't even know what that person's name is, you know. Yeah. I've never met anybody.
Sometimes the bully wants to come back and say sorry many years later, funny enough, rather than the victim.
I understand that, I understand that. And I understand also that I have no idea about that person and what their life was like when they were bullying me. I have no idea. And I'm sure there were good reasons at the time.
That's a very generous thing to say.
No, one thing I'm a great believer in people, no matter who the person
is.
You know, I'm sure the people who bullied me and I was in the receiver, I'm sure, God knows what their lives were like. You know,
they generally come from a.
They, you know, you just don't know, and I don't want to make any, assumptions at all. But you just don't know, and I would, you know, I like to think I'm somebody who. Gives people the benefit of the doubt, and I believe that there's goodness in everybody, you know. So I mean, you know, you talk about people come back to apologise. Yeah, I mean, I would have that conversation, but I've never met
intriguing. Sir Adrian Bolt. Sir Adrian Bolt used to control enormous orchestras with only his right hand and a stick.
That's great.
His stick technique was legendary. I remember says the text seeing him conduct Mahler's Symphony of 1,000 with his right hand.
What a great text. I love it. Whoever sent that in. That's great.
That's a real Radio 1 text right there.
Yeah, I love it. But he, I think Adrian Bolt used a baton that was like the size of a six arm, like a golf club. Like it was huge, I think. He didn't have to do anything else, you know. So.
The RTE Concert Orchestra Winter Sessions, an RTE Concert Orchestra collaboration with the RDS, will be broadcast on RTE Lyric FM and streamed on rte.ie/culture Fridays at 7, the 11th of December to the 1st of January. That is just what the world needs and just what the country needs, and led from the top by no better man than yourself, David Brophy. Thank you for coming in to see us.
Thanks, Ryan.
For such candid chats. And to you and your family, happy Christmas.
Thanks a million. I appreciate
it. Get the Johnny Mathis album out.
Listen, I want to ask you a question.
Go on.
On Friday night... You're doing Singing in the Rain.
I did Singing in the Rain.
Is that you singing? Was that your voice?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Because I was listening to it and I was saying, that's not offensive.
Yeah, because every year it's offensive. Pleasant. But because it was...
No, I don't mean that.
No, I know.
But I was listening to it and going, and I actually turned up the volume saying, I wonder, is that him?
Yeah, it is.
And it actually is you. And I'm kind of going... That's kind of, it's pleasant. You do more of it, Paz, potentially. You really should.
I sang
amazing.
Under controlled conditions. That normally it's in studio and you're huffing and puffing and panting or whatever. But so we did it in better conditions. But
what do you mean controlled auto-tune? Is that what you mean by controlled conditions?
By controlled conditions, somebody else did. No.
It was great. I enjoyed it. I was kind of going, that's nice.
Thank you, David.
I'm not just saying that, actually. You know,
I was laughing. I knew that it wasn't great when the guys who were there watching me. I know it was all right, but the guys
it
watching
was
me
were saying, I've heard a lot worse.
Here's what they said after. God, fair play to you, Ryan. You can whistle.
Okay.
David, thanks a million.
Thank you, Ryan. Happy Christmas to you.
And to you.